Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable!
Mayweather makes a pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact, I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 187 of the Last Round Podcast. Coming back off a week off, so we apologize that we were off last week. If you were expecting an episode and you didn't get it, and if you're especially subscribed on any of the platform podcast or the podcasting platforms, I guess Spotify or Apple Podcasts or any of those big ones especially, we apologize, but we are back. We are back to go through the fights and preview upcoming events and talk news and notes. Jumping right back into it, starting from last weekend, not this past weekend, last weekend from Minnesota, I believe, on ESPN Plus, Joette Gonzalez, recently signed by Top Rank within the last 7-8 months or so, took the decision loss against Isaac Dogbe, like I said, in a main event from the state of Minnesota. It was a competitive fight. I did catch it after the fact. There were some people that I saw, you know, with dissenting opinions saying Joette should have got it. But I mean, I think it was competitive enough that Dogbe, I guess, was justified in getting the win. But that's one of those where I still think that Joette Gonzalez is still going to be able to get solid matchups, maybe like a Jose Pedraza. You know how Top Rank uses Jose Pedraza? I feel at least at this moment, they're going to try to use Joette Gonzalez like that between 126 and 130. What do you think of what I just said, Mike? And what did you think about Dogbe's win?
Going into the fight, I thought Joette Gonzalez was going to be just too good for him. Not the biggest fan of Isaac Dogbe, just in terms of his ability. You know, he seems like a lovely guy. You know, he's got that little Niho saying that he always does, and all the fans seem to like him and stuff like that.
Was he still doing that? I think he kind of dropped that, didn't he?
I don't know. I know the fans do it. I saw, you know, Niho posted a fair few times on Twitter over the weekend. I'm not too sure whether he shouts it himself still. But yeah, I mean, I thought Joette could have just sneaked it, but it was close. I think Dogbe's improved a lot since, you know, we had those, you know, back-to-back defeats against Navarrete. Then what you said, I mean, Joette still has time, but it's kind of like he's going to have to rebuild for a third time, isn't it? Because, you know, he had that run, lost to Shakur Stevenson. Then he had another run, you know, fell short against Dogbe. And now does he have time for a third? And I think he does. I think maybe just take a little bit of time out. He's only 28 years old, still a baby. You know, maybe just find that drive. Maybe it's just been, you know, so much boxing over the last 18 years or whatever it's been. You know, his family are a big boxing family, pretty much all the sons and daughters box. And, you know, then he's gone from the amateur career, turned pro. Maybe just take 6 months, take a year, you know, go and find yourself. See if you still want it that much. See if you still, if the hunger's still there, then come back. Because he's still relatively young. And he's in, you know, a very good promotion. I'm sure they probably give him the time to rebuild and then come back and have another shot at it. But because on his day, I think he should have schooled him. I honestly think he should have schooled Dogbe. I don't really rate Dogbe. I think he's very basic. You know, he has improved, but he's been shown before, you know, that how kind of basic he is. And even that fight was very close. The fight of Adam Lopez was close, and I thought Dogbe actually lost that. I thought Adam Upper started too slowly in that. But, you know, we'll see. There's still a lot of time for Joette Gonzalez, and it'd be interesting to see where Dogbe goes from now, because Top Rank seem to have kind of backed him.
Right. No, yeah, I agree. I think Dogbe, he had a lot of hype behind him at the beginning, especially when he held the title. But after he took the first loss, he's never really been the same. And if you can't, you know, we're not denigrating Joette Gonzalez's ability here, but you know, if Dogbe fought a competitive matchup with somebody like Joette Gonzalez, you know, he's not going to be able to hang with the upper echelon of the division, I don't think. But I mean, we'll see. He got the win. Do you think that Top Rank and ESPN, who do you think they preferred from a marketing perspective to get the win, Joette or Dogbe?
That's a good question. Dogbe kind of has a bit of a following in the UK, but then also he kind of does stick to his roots, and I'm not too sure. He's somewhere in Africa, you know, that he comes from. So maybe he gets those fans as well. I wouldn't imagine he's got a big US following. And then Joette, I don't know about Joette.
I feel like Joette, you're right. I agree with that. But like Joette, especially fighting in Southern California, would bring out a crowd if he can, you know, begin winning and especially win a world title. You know, I think he would do well if you pair him with, you know, other Latino fighters in Southern California.
Yeah, I think the problem about Joette is he doesn't really promote himself at all. Doesn't really do many interviews. He does talk well though. When you do,
he does.
I mean, you have to grab him though. He's not one of those guys that's like finishes a fight or whatever and comes over to, you know, the media section and wants to give him. Like last time I got him on the, you know, for the show when I posted him on Twitter, I had to grab him. He wasn't going to stop and chat. You had to kind of like flag him down and, you know, get him to do the interview. But he does talk very well. He is good at that. Probably could do a little bit better to get those legion of Southern California fans, Latino fans behind him. But, you know, Latino fans, they back their own. You know, they're always going to. Any Hispanic fighter, they're going to be there. So that's he does have that going for him. But yeah, that's a good question. I would maybe say Joette by a little bit in terms of backing.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, who knows? I think he signed to Top Rank for a multi-year deal, which, you know, he's still okay. And like I said, as of right now, he's having a difficult time winning the big one and especially winning a world title. But he's a good enough fighter to be competitive with these guys at the moment. You know, like I said, going back to my original analogy, like a Jose Pedraza. How long has Top Rank been using Jose Pedraza in there? Between 135 and 140, you know? They've been using him for everything. They're like, oh, you know, the Olympic medalist and, you know. I mean, Pedraza arguably is probably Tank Davis's best win at the moment. You know, if you look at it, at least throughout his career. And so I think that Joette still, obviously, he still has a chance. He's still young enough to figure it out. I think he's, you know, he's good in the, at least job security wise. He's between divisions that there's a lot of talent. Excuse me. There's a lot of talent for him to showcase against, if you want to describe it like that. But Dogbe, I mean, was even Dogbe with a win? I honestly wouldn't even mind them running it back, running that fight back. Maybe put it as like the co-main event to a bigger fight. Maybe like a Shakur Stevenson or something like that. You know, Shakur Stevenson's main event. You put Joette and Dogbe as a co-main. You know, run it back. Because if you put Dogbe against what Navarrete again, it's gonna be the same. It's gonna be the same.
I could see them get hit. I could see Top Rank feeding Dogbe to Ribosi Ramirez.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about him. That's a good one. Yeah. Maybe. I mean.
Or do they want to keep two horses? Or do they want one horse? You know, that's the thing, right?
I know. I could see it. You're right. I mean, those obviously, you know, he's going to get a shot somewhere. But we're just going to have to wait and see. But also on the card. Oh, I did want to touch on. We were just going to touch on the main event, but this one popped into my head is Gabriel Flores Jr. from Stockton, California. I don't know, Mike. He's been on the show. He was on the show a couple years ago. I think when Top Rank first signed him, he came on the Last Round podcast here with us and talked to us. But what is it? Three straight losses now.
I think he may have had a little win in between, a little comeback win.
Did he? Okay, well, so, but it's three overall losses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So three overall losses now, and they've all been very, what's the word I'm looking for? They've all been, there's like an exclamation point behind it, I guess.
Sorry, I don't know what the... two losses. He lost to Luis Alberto Lopez, came back on a win, and then he lost to Giovanni Cabrera in the fight that you're talking about just now.
Oh, I thought for sure it was three. Maybe it was two. All right, my mistake. You corrected me. But, you know, somebody that just goes to show you, you know, that it's obviously good to have a big amateur pedigree and to fight as much as you can. I mean, look at those Russian and Ukrainian fighters, Lomachenko, Bivol, and, you know, all those guys, MJ. But sometimes your talents just don't translate to the pros too well. And as of right now, Flores Jr., that's what's happening to him. How much do you think that Flores Jr.'s online presence throughout his short young career so far has affected his ability inside the ring?
I don't know if it affects it as such, but he was, you know, built to be this fighter, this prospect that he wasn't. You could see early on that he had literally no power. And as soon as they put him up there with somebody that could withstand those feather fists, he would always kind of throw a lot of like weak punches, but also stay in the pocket.
Right.
And then that tended to be, in my opinion, that tended to be his problem. And, you know, I'm all for focusing on, you know, social media, building your brand and all that sort of stuff, because, you know, you need to do that to, you know, gather a following, which obviously leads to more money, stuff like that. But don't put all your eggs in one basket. You still need a product. You know, you need to be, you know, good in the ring, focus on your training and stuff like that, and then maybe hire someone to do it. But, you know, eventually the bread and butter is going to be you're fighting. And when you get, if you've got like all this exterior stuff about how good you are, and, you know, you can't do it in the ring, unfortunately, it's going to crumble real fast. And unfortunately, that tend to be, in my opinion, you know, something that Flores didn't really have. And maybe a change of trainer, you know, moving away from being coached by his dad may help. You know, he is super young, because obviously, you know, at the time he was the youngest signing by Top Rank, I think at 16 years old.
Yeah.
May help, but, you know.
And he called himself Stockton's King or something like that.
Yeah, you know, it's... I get understand like the loyalty thing, but at the end of the day, if moving camps to a more experienced trainer that helps you, then
it's also. Who knows how much Top Rank is paying him? Obviously, if they signed him, you know, it should be decent. He's been fighting on ESPN platforms and stuff like that, but like, you know, but it's probably not that crazy. But you also got to think about the fact that if he goes to a more experienced trainer, which he probably should, I think that after this last loss, I think that tells him everything he needs to know. They also have to pay that trainer. You know, if you go to a Freddie Roach, if you go to a Robert Garcia, if you go to, you know, Joe Goosen or, you know, anybody like that, any one of the prominent ones. I mean, like, they're not going to do it for free. Like, hey, you know, like, I mean, some of them might be like, oh, yeah, you know, let's test you out. But they're going to want to get paid. And as of right now in his young career, like, you know, are they willing to share any of the profit or the revenue that they're making in the pay? But you're right, though. He needs a new trainer. If he wants to continue boxing, he needs to get out of his comfort zone. He needs to get out of, I think he probably still trains in Stockton, the Stockton Bay Area up there in Northern California. He needs to get out of that area and go train somewhere else. Preferably down here in Southern California. You know, Robert Garcia, Freddie Roach, Joe Goosen, Manny Robles. You know, you got a lot of options down here. Get him out of his comfort zone. Put him with somebody new who could, like, hey, you know, no, don't do this. Like, this is what you're doing wrong, or we're going to change this. You know, he just needs a total reset. He needs a total reset. The good thing about it is he has... time is way on his side. It's way on his side. You know, he can suffer these early losses like this and still, you know, we can look back in 10 years from now when he's like in his late 20s or whatever he is, almost 30, and he could be one of the best fighters in the world, or at least have had a great career or a solid career where he's been in big fights and making decent paydays. And we could remember, oh, remember when we talked about those few, those early losses, and he made the switch, he, we got a new trainer, he went with so-and-so, and now look at him. He's actually carved out a pretty solid career. That's what he needs to do. You know, he needs a total reset. He needs a total reset. I mean, hopefully the losses, especially this last one, just didn't affect his confidence. I know I saw a lot of comparisons after he lost, because in the weigh-in and in the face-off, he was he was trying to act tough to the opponent, not shake his hand and all that. And then people were comparing him to who was the other guy that lost to Jones Zepeda on a Top Rank show. He was from Brooklyn or New York, Puerto Rican. He was trying to act tough, and he got knocked out.
Was it that Josue Vargas?
I think so. Yeah. So I saw some comparisons to that. It's just like, oh, you know, you tried to act tough and you got stopped. You know, like, I mean, it's kind of true. You know, I mean, it helps with the marketing. You know, you have to win. You have to win to be able to solidify and get credibility behind that type of behavior. You know, you have to. So. You know, it is what it is, but, you know, he still has time on his side. Let's just see if the losses didn't affect his confidence level and his mentality enough for him to, you know, be like, hey, you know what? I'm going to hang it up, which I don't think so, but he needs a total reset. Moving on to last Thursday, the 28th of July, from the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, on DAZN. Mike, you were there live and in person covering for the last round. Another Gonzalez, the younger brother of Joette Gonzalez, who is still with Golden Boy Promotions. Joust Gonzalez gets the third round knockout over Jose Angulo, who takes the third loss of his career. What did you think about Joust Gonzalez's win?
I'm impressed. Honestly, I have been in the last two fights. I think he's very good. He did a lot more heavy-handed than his brother. Likes can box, but at the same time, he's got that grit and determination where, you know, he can stand and bang if he needs to change it up, stand in the pocket, have a good tear up, but can also, you know, switch and, you know, kind of like box from the outside. Very good performance from him. Good finish, calm, cool, collected, little body shot, puts the guy down. Like I said on the Twitter, I don't think I've been to a card that had so many, you know, body shot finishes. Unbelievable card for those people that, you know, love a body shot. Just cripples someone, doesn't it? You know, all of a sudden it just kind of kicks in and they just kind of fall to the floor and, you know, they just can't get back up as much as they want to. Gonzalez afterwards spoke with me, did a little quick interview, you know, kind of called out a lot of people, right? Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney, those sorts of guys, Jojo Diaz.
I mean, I give him credit for getting his, you know, calling out those bigger names to try to get his name associated with it. But, you know, it's not going to happen right now. Golden Boy's still going to try to develop him a little bit more before even thinking about any of those names, obviously.
I'll tell you one that I thought was interesting because I didn't think anyone would want a part of him. Zepeda.
William? You think they'll do that fight?
I asked him because I said to him afterwards, I was like, you know, which one do you think is actually the most makeable? Because obviously, you know, the Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, all those guys are kind of like, you know, tied up at this time. So, yeah, that would be that'd be a great fight. You know, Zepeda's obviously had a lot of fights, great to watch. One of the fans' favorites, kind of broke out during COVID. I'd pay to see that.
Yeah, you know what? I know what? If anybody has the reputation to put their fighters, young and old or whatever, against each other within their promoter, it's Golden Boy. So, I mean, a Zepeda Joust Gonzalez fight, I think that would be a pretty cool fight, especially in the Southern California area. You never know. I mean, I would think give Joust maybe one, maybe two more fights before Zepeda, but at least one. But let's see. I'm sure Golden Boy, you know, is hoping Joust Gonzalez pans out. You know, it's not that Joette didn't pan out. I feel like, do you think that, because Golden Boy and Top Rank still have a decent relationship, I believe. Because remember in the last couple of years or so, there was like a photo of Bob Arum hanging out with Oscar De La Hoya and Eric Gomez, like at a dinner table or something. And they were, you know, they just took a picture and stuff. I feel that you know, and this is just me speculating, we haven't heard anything, but Golden Boy maybe told Joette, you know, they gave him a shot to try to win. He didn't win. And it's possible that they told Joette, hey, look, you know, how about we let you go and you go try to find, you know, another promoter to work with, because, you know, it's just not going to work over here. And then maybe Golden Boy talked to Top Rank, like, hey, you guys got a lot of talent in those divisions, in that division. You know, Joette's a good guy to have, you know, kind of endorsing him. And the same thing maybe with Sinisa Estrada or something like that. Because I feel like Top Rank, Golden Boy, Bob Arum and De La Hoya and Eric Gomez and those guys have a communication line open like that, where Golden Boy might say, hey, you know, give this kid a shot. You know, he can add to the stable that you have in that division. Do you think that's possible?
I could see that from, you know, someone like Roberto Diaz, you know, chatting to, like, you know, Bruce Trampler and all those other guys over at Top Rank. You know, I'm sure if you leave, you know, just in good standing, you know, you don't burn any bridges, I can see that they'll probably, you know, hook you up with someone else, because at times, like you said, you sometimes just end up being with the wrong promotion. For example, Crawford was Top Rank, but the rest of the 147 division was over at PBC. So sometimes you have to leave and go to another promotion, and it is on good terms. It's just, unfortunately, you know, the cards aren't where you need them.
Right. Yeah. But we will see. Also on the card, Manuel Flores remains undefeated at 13-0, also with a third round knockout over Daniel Moncada, who takes the second loss of his career. Did I read that right?
Seventh.
I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm looking at here. Seventh loss of his career. What did you think about that matchup?
Definitely, well, you know, a local favorite, Manuel Flores, like he kind of touched on in the interview that I did and posted on Twitter. He wants something bigger and better, you know, whether it's, you know, he'd love it to be in Indio, but keep busy. Obviously sells a lot of tickets. That's why I'm sure Golden Boy would keep using him in Indio. Probably wants to just move on to some of these bigger cards. I would say, you know, the Fantasy Springs cards now and again have a big fighter on there, but they're kind of mainly little prospects, but still good local fights to watch for us. But, you know, he is interested, and he's in a very strong gym. You know, when you can get in there with some of those, you know, Kazakhs and Uzbeks that Joe Diaz has, like MJ Akhmadelidov, sparring with him, it's not going to do you wrong, is it? You know, I'm sure you learn bucket loads of things with being in with somebody like him. So, yeah, he's good to watch, and I think he wants to be back out again real quick, same as, you know, Jaus Gonzalez. So it'll be interesting to see where Golden Boy do with them next, because, like we always say, Golden Boy do match hard.
They do. Yeah, they definitely do. You got to give them credit for that. Rounding off the card, actually, two more bouts. Elnor Abduramiyov. Did I say that right? How do you say it?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's right.
Is he a Joe Diaz fighter? He is, right? That Coachella Valley, man. Yeah. I might as well just put all his fighters on the card. He made it a quick night, too. First round knockout over Lionel. Is it Lionel or Lionel?
I think it's Lionel Moreno.
Lionel Moreno.
Beautiful body shot. Another beautiful body shot. I remember when I went to Joel Diaz's gym, I was chatting to him, and he was just saying, like, how much of a beast this guy is. Super strong. And you could tell, just to be beautifully planted. They both kind of threw at the same time. He connected with the body shot. Damn. Second later, just crumpled, and there was no getting back up. He picked up a IBF North American super featherweight title. On to bigger and better things. Just another beast coming out of that gym.
Joel Diaz and those Eastern Ukrainian, Eastern European fighters, huh? You know, who would have thought that, huh? Like in the desert in Southern California, Coachella Valley, with a Mexican trainer in Joel Diaz, and he's getting all these Eastern European fighters, like, all the time. It's so crazy. That is so crazy.
World of Boxing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a promotion.
Yeah, they bring them all over. I interviewed Joel one time and asked him why it was.
Yeah, because didn't it start with who did he start training? Did he start training somebody?
Ruslan Provnikov.
Provnikov. Yeah, Provnikov. The Siberian Rocky. Yeah, he trained Provnikov, and then World of Boxing noticed and they said, hey, we want to bring this guy over too. And they saw that these fighters, it was working well with Diaz. Mm-hmm. So they've been bringing fighters over for years now. It's freaking crazy. It's nuts, man.
It's funny because there's not a lot in the area, but I think they like that military style training.
Yeah, And Diaz it's less distractions too.
Yeah, and Joe Diaz is very old school, very like abrupt and on you. And I think they like that. I think that's maybe similar to the amateur the careers that they have over there.
Yeah, you got to give them credit, man, because like they think, oh, I'm going to California, or people like, oh, I'm going to California, and you're going to like the desert of it. And Coachella Valley is like what? From LA is like 200 miles, maybe more.
Yeah, so we like 3 hours, 4 hours, maybe.
Maybe.
It's an hour from me. So you're probably looking at 2.5 hours to LA, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So maybe they're used to the mentality. But if they're going to Southern California, to California in general, and they're going somewhere where like it's desert pretty much, then you know that they're like ready to train. They're coming to fight. They're coming to train and to fight and to become as best as they can become, which is, I got to give them credit for that. And also on the card, friend of the show, I know, Mike, you've been monitoring his progress here. He finally gets his debut, his professional debut. He was supposed to get it with Top Rank several times within the last couple of years, but it never panned out. And now he makes his debut with Golden Boy Promotions. Daniel Chucky Barrera is now 1-0 with the third round knock. There's a night of knockouts in the third round over Jesus Gordinez, who takes the fourth loss of his career. Like I said, we've been waiting for Chucky Barrera to make his professional debut for the longest time. And now that he did, what'd you think?
I thought he looked really, really good for his pro debut. You could see, I think, just all of those amateur fights. He didn't look overawed by the occasion. You know, he sold like 300 plus tickets. To say he was the first fight on, it was a good atmosphere, because normally a lot of the shows are kind of dead, especially in like America. They kind of just all show up for the main event. They have that kind of weird style of, instead of coming and making it like a night out like we do in the UK, a lot of them will just turn up for like the co-feature and then the main event. So I thought he did well. You could see that. I think his coach, Al Franco, posted a video that they were practicing on the pads the exact combination and punch which finished it in the third round. Chucky dropped him in the second and then finished him off in the third. Yeah, cool, calm, collected. I thought he mixed it up really well. Didn't, when he had him hurt, he didn't just throw, a whole bucket load of punches. They were nicely selected. And you could just see the amateur experience he had, turned him into a good pro, especially on his professional debut. And slowly but surely, he's only young, so there's no need to rush it. And
first fight, very early. But we'll definitely keep tabs on him as the years go by. Also, this past Saturday, the 30th of July on Showtime, Danny Garcia returns and makes his debut at 154 pounds as he gets the majority decision over Jose Benavidez Jr. Majority decision, I caught like the last half of this fight, and at least the last half that I saw didn't really tell the story of the majority decision. I think Garcia did deserve the unanimous decision win, which was, I don't know what. There was one judge who saw it a draw. Like I said, I caught the last half, but I don't know what they were watching. Garcia makes his debut, like I said, at 154. So it looks like he's campaigning there. But then after the fight, he called out a couple names like Keith Thurman, which I think that's the fight, honestly, that's coming. Because then Thurman responded to him online. And, I think that rematch is coming full circle. Garcia called out Erzlandi Lara for the middleweight title at 155 pounds. And I'm like, what the hell? So, it is what it is. But Danny Garcia's back. The fight wasn't really like too crazy of eventful. I thought honestly like that Benavidez could have went down just because he kind of gets sloppy sometimes and then he gets caught like he did with Crawford. he kind of gets into a firefight. And I thought if he got into a firefight, even with Garcia, Garcia has a chin, so he'd have a better chance of catching Benavidez and either knocking him down or knocking him out. But overall, what'd you think about Garcia's win and his return to 150 at 154 pounds?
I thought it was a good performance. The fight was kind of boring. I thought Danny Garcia, you know, won it quite convincingly, but it never caught fire, you know, which is kind of surprising for a Danny Garcia fight. Interesting to see what he does next. I thought Jose Benavidez just never really got going. He never really used the advantages that he had, you know, going into it, you know, the height and the reach, and probably a more natural at that weight as well. You thought he would have tried to bully him, but he never did. And I always forget how good Danny Garcia is. He's one of those fighters that, you know, he kind of does get a little bit of shit from fans and stuff like that. Look at his resume. You know, there's plenty of fighters that we probably regard as better fighters than Danny off the top of our head. But then just look at the people that he's fought, you know, like Errol Spence, Sean Porter, Brandon Rios, Keith Thurman, Roberto Guerrero, Malinaji, Lamont Peterson, Matisse, Shab Judah, Eric Morales, Amir Khan, Kendall Holt, Nate Campbell. The list goes on and on and on. So be interested to see what he does next. I don't know. He might... Good luck to him if he manages to pick up a world title at 154 pounds, because I think aren't they all held there by Charlo? All the major ones.
Yeah, I think he's... Charlo's bad news for Danny Garcia at 154. It'd still be a competitive fight because Garcia, he could fight. He's a warrior, but yeah. I think Charlo is too much for him right now. Garcia needs a couple more fights under his belt, maybe one or two more, before he steps into the ring with somebody like Charlo. Because Charlo's obviously the best fighter at 154 pounds.
Hopefully he stays active. You know, when you look back on his career, like all the names I just said, it's kind of eye-opening to, you know, how good Danny Garcia is. And I don't think he really gets that sort of credit yet. Maybe when he retires and we look
back. I like Danny Garcia, man. I think even though he's been world champion, he's lost. He's always fought well. He's never really been outclassed, you know? He's never really been outclassed to really lose, like, oh yeah, he got his ass kicked. He's always been competitive, you know? So I've always gave him credit. Garcia's never really been, you can never really say that he's been that guy to really like just come in as the opponent. Like, he's always been that guy, like, oh no, he's a threat. He's a legitimate world champion threat. You know, he's just unfortunately fought other guys who have been that much better than him. Not that much, just a little bit better than him on the night, you know. But he's fought all the killers. He's been in the ring with them. You know, Spence, Thurman, Porter. You know, he's been in the ring with all them. So, you know, I'm a fan, man. I'm a fan. And then obviously he made his speech after the fight about the mental health battles that he's had. Yeah, so you know, he got to give him credit because like not a lot of people knew about that. So he kind of, you know, kept it in the shadows, and then he came out and said it after the fight and said he was struggling, but you know, he's back now and he's, you know, he's doing okay. And you know, good for him, man. Good for him. You know, like he said, boxing it helps him, like a kind of like a therapy in a way, which it does. You know, I think we can all say that in one form or another. So good for him, man. Good for him. Where do you think we see him next? I think we're going to see a Thurman fight. I think we're going to see a Thurman fight based on how he called out Keith Thurman and Lara for the middleweight title at 155, but he called out Thurman and Thurman responded online on like Twitter or Instagram or something. You know, by how Thurman responds with those colorful words. I think we're going to see a Thurman Garcia fight. I think that's what we're going to see for those two.
Makes sense. Makes sense for them both, I think. PBC like to keep it in-house. Both of them, last paydays for those guys. You know, they're coming down the hill, aren't they? They're not going up the hill like they were before. And I think I could see the PBC doing that just to kind of, you know, generate them both a good payday and, you know, probably try to stick it on, you know, another one of those pay-per-views, the monthly PBC pay-per-views that we're used to.
Yeah. No, yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah, but I think Thurman Garcia is definitely, if it's not next, at least it's after the next one, but it's definitely coming. Also on the card, Gary Antoine Russell remains undefeated at 16-0 with a TKO in the sixth round of Rancis Bartholomew. Bartholomew was down in round six. And then also on the card, Ali Aaron Dermenzian takes the 17th win of his career in a 10-round unanimous decision win over Adam Kownacki, who now takes the third professional loss of his career. And this is in a heavyweight matchup. Kownacki is just, like we talked about, Gabriel Flores Jr. earlier taking losses and, you know, people not expecting that because there was kind of hype behind him. Kownacki was the same. You know, it's been the same with him. I mean, and then you think about, like, didn't Kownacki have an opportunity to fight Anthony Joshua before Ruiz got the chance? Wasn't that an option?
Yeah, there was talk of, you know, him and also Luis Ortiz.
I think they rejected it, right?
Yeah, there was some thing about
reportedly.
Yeah, I don't know whether Al Heyman was kind of like, hey, we're not saving your show, you know, and told the guys, like, hey, you don't have the choice. I could see that because he's obviously not the biggest fan of Eddie Hearn. So, yeah, I don't know. There's something wrong with him because, you know, Kownacki used to, you know, be so busy. Like, he would always kind of, like, just overwhelm people in the heavyweight division because he threw so many punches. And I don't know whether it's just down to fitness, bad camps, or what, because that Ali Aaron Dermenzian, like, he's no great shakes. Like, he's very limited. But Kownacki just doesn't seem to, whatever he had before, he seems to have lost it, whether it's just a bad camp, she's not preparing properly, taking fights at the wrong time, or, you know, maybe he just kind of like lost his will, but he needs to go away. He's another one who needs to go away because he used to be good to watch for a heavyweight because, you know, instead of...
Who's his trainer?
That's a good question. I'm not too sure. You know, it's somebody over in New York, New Jersey area. Yeah. I'm not too sure who he.
Yeah,
who
I mean, like,
now,
isn't that usually the, you know, the proposed solution for fighters who take losses like this, especially when, you know, it's not expected that you take losses, at least at this point, that you need like a total reset. Like, hey, maybe you need to go somewhere else with, you know, another trainer, maybe somebody who's more experienced in another part of maybe the country and, you know, complete reset. You know, maybe that's what he needs. You know, what about like an Abel Sanchez going to Abel Sanchez and Big Bear here? You know,
yeah, you know, like a Sanchez or even like a Joe Guzan, I guess. I don't know, just because of the fact his style doesn't really suit Abel Sanchez because he's not really a combination puncher, is he?
No, right, yeah. But I mean, you need a complete reset, though. That's the thing.
He does. It looks like he does. He definitely needs something because. He was fun to watch, and he brought a good Polish crowd to New York. So I'm pretty sure PBC kind of wanted him to win because he was a draw in that area. And you know, how long is it until those fans stop showing up due to bad performances?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So we will see. Rounding off the card, Sergey Dervinchenko gets the 10-round unanimous decision win over Joshua Conley, who takes the fourth loss of his career. Dervinchenko. You know, obviously has been in some pretty competitive fights, exciting fights, especially against Triple G. He did hurt Triple G in that fight. He fought Charlo. Charlo even says that guy, you know, he could fight. You know, Dervinchenko is one of those, another ones, Eastern European guys. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in Coachella Valley. You know, maybe not now, but like, you never know. He could pop up in there. And also this past weekend from the Bournemouth. Sorry to our UK listeners. Bournemouth International Center. Chris Billum-Smith, 16-1, gets the 12-round unanimous decision win over Isaac Chamberlain. This was for the Commonwealth and EBU, European Cruiserweight title. What did you think about Chris Billum-Smith's performance?
Just gets better and better and better.
Better.
Thought it actually could have been a kind of close fight because Isaac Chamberlain's, you know, gone away, grinded, came back, brought back, you know, like a different package into the ring. But yeah, Chris Billings Smith's getting good. You're like Shane McGuigan, like I think he really is, you know, as good as, you know, the people say in the UK, say he's kind of like a really up and coming good trainer. And you can see that really in just, you know, what Chris Billings Smith did here. Really good gym, just bringing out some killers. And McGuigan's tend to actually match the fighters really hard. If you look at like Cal Frampton and, you know, Joshua Taylor, what they did in their short careers, they definitely don't hang about. And, you know, it's done Chris Billings Smith good, especially being in, when you've got someone like a Lawrence O'Coley in the gym, you know, and Daniel Dubois to spar with. You know, I'm sure it's some heavy sparring for the guy. So it's working, and probably on to, he's just got what, Commonwealth and European. Now it's time for world.
Yeah, he's getting on the cusp there. He's getting on the cusp. Also on that card, Ben Whitaker takes the first win of his career, first professional win in his debut with the second round KO over Greg O'Neill, who takes the seventh loss of his career. He is now 6-7-1. Ben Whitaker making his professional debut. What'd you think?
Was looking forward to it. I think it wasn't really much of a guess, was it? Everyone's been talking about, you know, how good he's going to look when he turns into when he gets into the ring, and, you know, he's got Sugar Hill in his corner wearing the Kronk colors. So, you know, he's going to be, looks like he's going to be entertaining, but he's also, you know, good. He's got the actual product. And a lot of people say that, like, that persona that you see in a ring is really just kind of like entertainment. And he's actually a pretty quiet, nice guy, you know, behind the scenes, which, you know, to me makes it even better that he kind of gets both sides of the business. You know, it is sporting, but at the same time, it's a business and it's entertainment. And he's ticking all of those boxes. Just got to make sure that, you know, stays focused and gets the job done in the ring. And yeah, really looking forward to that. And just kind of see what weight he's going to settle at, and, you know, how many, is he going to go up and down the weights, try and win a couple of world titles, or is he just going to focus on one? Because, you know, what he turned pro at and what he used to fight at in amateur is, you know, you know, different. So we can probably go up and down, you know, middleweight, super middleweight.
Got good prospects moving forward in his career, huh? He seems like,
yeah, I mean, I think he's
work out.
Yeah, definitely. If any of them, and you're going to put your house in it, I think you'd put your house on Ben Whitaker.
That's a big endorsement. Also this past weekend from the Virtu Motors Arena in Newcastle, Josh Kelly returns and gets the unanimous decision win over 10 rounds against Lucas Brian Ariel Bastida. This was for the WBO International Super Welterweight title. Josh Kelly returns. What do you think about his performance and his eventual win?
I don't know what it is about Josh. He just needs something to kind of light himself, because he's one of those guys that fights down to the level of his opponent. You know, like when he was coming through, when he was in with these guys that he should have been blowing out, he'd go like 10 rounds and kind of make it a struggle. And, you know, when we saw him in Arizona, he was fighting like a journeyman, like early on the card. And, you know, he was getting clocked a bit and stuff like that. And I was just like, come on, dude. Like, if these are like a level one opponent, like you should be like up there, like level three, level four, and just blast them out of there. Get them out there as fast as you can. You know, build some heat from the crowd. You know, get that following, because you're doing that sort of job. Because essentially that's what they're there for. You know, they may pick somebody who's a little bit tougher to give you those rounds, but, you know, early on in your career, they're kind of just cannon fodder, you know. And he was always kind of making like hard work of it and stuff like that, and getting clocked and coming out with cuts and bruises. And yeah, I don't know, he just needs something in there, because I'm afraid to say he might end up just being one of those kind of gym fighters that's just freaking goddamn amazing in sparring, but just can't do it for some reason, like under the lights. And I'm not saying it's like an anxiety type thing. Maybe he's just, he can't get to that level, you know, that fourth and fifth gear for some reason when he's in there, because we haven't seen it yet in the pros. But I hope we do, because he's a Northeast fighter and I'm from the Northeast of England.
Yeah. Yeah. What did Mayweather say? He said it before. He's like, oh, you know, you can be the best fighter in the gym, but I'm the best fighter under the lights. That's where it matters. It's true. It is true. Moving on to fight previews, this upcoming Saturday, the 6th of August, from the Dickies Arena in Fort Worth, Texas, on DAZN. Texas, shout out to Texas. You guys are getting a ton of fights. Virgil Ortiz Jr. returns 18-0 against Michael Mickinson, who's also undefeated at 22-0. This fight was actually supposed to happen earlier this year, right? But Virgil Ortiz, I believe, got injured the week prior to the fight. I think it was reportedly about the weight cut. So luckily he's okay, and they rescheduled this bout. Two undefeated fighters. What more can you ask for? What should we expect in this fight, Mike?
I think Mickinson is one of those guys that's, you know, very kind of like negative, and he just kind of like scrapes out a win. You know, he's a tricky customer. But I just think Virgil Ortiz is going to notice like early on that, you know, Mickinson hasn't got the power in there to back him up. And I think eventually Virgil's going to find the key and unlock it. And, you know, I think he'll get Mickinson out of there. Mickinson is a bit of a stinker. You know, he kind of negates a lot of things, but I think Virgil will eventually find something. And I think he'll win by KO, somewhere like round 7, round 8.
So Virgil Ortiz, yeah, I think he is the favorite in this fight. And obviously he wins a lot of his fights by stoppage or knockout. But where does he go from here? Assuming he gets the win, let's just speculate he gets the victory. He's obviously waiting for Crawford and Spence, since we haven't heard anything as of today, as of this recording, but as of right now, they seem like they're working behind the scenes to make that fight. But Ortiz is kind of left outside in the dark, because I think he's number one in the WBO, I think, which Crawford has, but obviously Crawford won't fight Ortiz unless the Spence fight doesn't happen. Who can Ortiz realistically fight? Are they going to put him against Alexis Rocha, since they're both Golden Boy? I mean,
I think that's the only one you're looking at, really, right? Unless they go across to Matchroom and try and fight, you know, some of the Matchroom 147s until like PBC, until either somebody, you know, wins the Undisputed, we get the Crawford and Spence, and then, you know, those guys move up and those, all the belts, you know, become vacant, and,
yeah,
you know, Top Rank, PBC, and then Matchroom and Golden Boy can all have a little go at them, because at the minute they're all over it at PBC, and nobody else really gets, you know, any chance to play, and those guys aren't going to, you know, share the toys. So depending on what happens, you know, that's going to leave, you know, Lex and kind of Virgil sitting there. So yeah, if any promoter is going to put those guys together, it's going to be Bernard Hopkins and Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. And in the co-main event, Maurice Mo Hooker returns 27-2-3, and he goes up against Blair Cobbs. Cobbs returning after his lost to Alexis Rocha at the Galen Center in USC in downtown Los Angeles earlier this year. I think Hooker is still too experienced for somebody like Cobbs. So I think Hooker takes it. But if Cobbs can manage to pull out the win, that's a big statement. That's a huge statement. What do you think? Cobbs beating Alexis Rocha or Cobbs being Maurice Hooker, a former world champion, what's a bigger win for him?
If Cobbs beat Maurice Hooker at the minute, because, you know, I would say Lex obviously is still classed as a prospect, right? He's still on the rise, whereas, you know, Maurice Hooker used to be, you know, a world title holder at 140.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that would be a bigger surprise if, you know, Maurice Hooker managed to, if he beat Maurice Hooker. It's kind of strange that he's got in there from a Lex fight to Maurice Hooker fight, to be honest with you. That's kind of...
I mean, you got to give him credit for that, because it's just like, hey, you want to fight Mo Hooker? And Cobbs is like, let's do it. You know, you got to give him credit for that, you know?
No, yeah, definitely, because, you know, I think Maurice Hooker, you know, if he's got anything left in him, I think he should, you know, get rid of Blair Cobbs. Blair Cobbs is pretty, you know, pretty basic fighter, you know, super nice guy, and kind of made his career on being a, you know, a boxing version of Ric Flair.
I mean, he's trying, man. They gave it a shot. They're like, hey, if he pans out and he keeps winning, you know, the personality works. Let's just see if the ability works.
Yeah, super clever idea, because he's very limited and basic as a fighter. I don't think he's ever going to get anywhere as a fighter, in my opinion, but.
I mean, let's give it a shot, man. You never know. He could prove you wrong on Saturday. But I like Mo Hooker, man. I still think he's got some stuff left. I know he lost to Ortiz, and then he lost to Jose Ramirez. But I still think Mo Hooker is dangerous. I still think he's young enough and experienced enough to give some people great fights at 147 pounds. I still think it. And you never know. Maybe Golden Boy is looking at Maurice Hooker as a potential next opponent for Alexis Rocha. Why not?
Good shout. Or Virgil.
Well, he's fought where Virgil already beat him.
Well, I'm right. Yeah, my bad. Yeah,
yeah. That's a good, I mean, they could run it back if, because it was a good fight up until Virgil beat him. It was exciting. They could run it back if they don't have anybody for Virgil to fight, like a Crawford or any one of those PBC welterweights. They could. I could see it. Like, hey, Mo Hooker, you guys had a great fight. You want a rematch? Let's run it back, because you guys, you know, it was competitive until Virgil stopped him. But like I said, I could see Mo Hooker, if he wins, Goldberg could say, hey, how about matching Hooker and Rocha? You know, maybe sometime next year.
He's probably the only name that's kind of, you know, floating around free agency.
Yeah. And Mo Hooker, like I said, he's a good name.
No, he is. Yeah. I mean, I think the fans like him, you know. He has that, you know, crazy story of having all those kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's kind of fight, man. He can fight. I'm a fan.
Yeah, he's witty interviews.
I picked him to win against Jose Ramirez when they fought. And I remember there was people talking to me like, man, you don't think Jose's going to win? I was like, well, it's not, I don't think he can win. I just think that Hooker's going to beat him on this night. And that was a good fight, too, up until it wasn't. Yeah. That was a good fight. So it's – and all Mo Hooker's losses, he's been competitive. So you know, he's good, man. He's good. And I think Hooker's just, he's too much for Cobbs, but Golden Boy's just going to be like, well, you know, let's see Cobbs. Let's see if you can get a win over somebody like Mo Hooker, which I don't think is the case, but we will see. Rounding off the card, Marlene Esparza, 12-1, goes up against Ava Guzman. This is for the WBA and WBC flyweight world titles. Marlene Esparza is now seemingly the focus of female boxing for Golden Boy Promotions after Sanisa Estrada left Golden Boy. They came to terms on her release, probably a mutual release, and now she has recently signed with Top Rank. So it looks like Marlene Esparza is now the focus of Golden Boy's female division, right?
Yeah, it seems so. I mean, I think personally I would have got rid of Esparza and put all my money in Estrada, to be honest with you, but you know, Marlon's been there for a long time. You know, we were kind of hoping that we'd see her and Estrada against each other again, because, you know, I think we need to kind of obviously clash the two strongest people in the divisions, or in and around the divisions, you know, constantly, just so we get, you know, good women's fights going forward. But yeah, good luck to, you know, Estrada. And I thought she would have signed with Matchroom, but it's good to see, you know, Top Rank, you know, bringing in another female alongside Michaela Mayer.
Yeah. Yeah, it could work. Also this weekend from the SSE Arena in Belfast, Ireland, on ESPN Plus, Michael Conlan returned after his first loss. I believe, was it last year or earlier this year?
Earlier this year.
It was March, yeah. Right?
It does seem like a long time ago, but yeah.
Yeah, I felt like it was a while ago, but there's been a lot of fights since then. Going up against Miguel Mariaga, 30-5. Mariaga is a pretty good opponent, man. He's been in there with a lot of big names. I think this is a pretty solid comeback fight for Conlan. Probably tougher than people think. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it is. You know, Mariaga's been in there, and he's a tough opponent. And, like, pretty much all of his losses have come against, you know, world champions, or, you know, people from, you know, the upper, like, the Class A of that division. You know, like Nicholas Walters, Oscar Valdez, Lomachenko, Joette Gonzalez, Eduardo Ramirez, you know, all of his losses, and, you know, they're all names of note. I think, you know, they're probably hoping that Conlan catches him kind of on the, you know, on the slide, but it, like we just said, he will still be a good name to have, you know, on your resume. He's coming off a loss. His last fight was, you know, December 2021, where he lost a unanimous decision to Eduardo Ramirez. I think Conlan probably has enough to beat Mariaga. You know, I think Conlan is a little bit probably like overrated, or, you know, he's kind of been given, you know, quite an easy career up until, you know, probably the TJ Doheny fight, and then fighting like Lee Wood. You know, they kind of used to roll him out as promotion for the St. Patrick's Day fights in New York. Unfortunately, he kind of did that to him, you know, after his, you know, promising, you know, amateur career. Good fight against Lee Wood, though. He was probably actually winning And then, you know, like Danny was just saying before, got caught. You know, there's another one like Mo Hooker where he was probably winning that fight and got caught by Lee Wood late on.
That was a good fight, though. That was a great fight.
Yeah, definitely probably a candidate for like fight of the year. And
You know what? I think as of right now, it probably could be. Like, I know there was other great fights, but in terms of like the drama and the ending and how it ended and in New York City, like, I don't know what else encapsulate right now. Fight of the year right now.
I think that maybe beats, in my opinion, Taylor and Serrano, just because we got a finish.
No, yeah.
Taylor Serrano was literally like...
And the finish was like he got knocked out through the ropes. Luckily, he was okay, but he literally got knocked out through the ropes.
Yeah, it's like, great.
Oh my gosh, that was wild.
And it was good because you got to see Conlon in there with somebody where it made him step up a gear or even maybe two gears. Because before that, I've kept thinking, I was like, man, Conlon's just not going to work out. Doesn't look like he's got it. He's struggling going 10 rounds, 12 rounds with these guys. And then he gets in there with Lee Wood and he showed us a lot. Yeah, he definitely moved on.
No, yeah, yeah. He showed a lot. Yeah,
in that fight. And I pick him to win this one. I think Mariaga's probably over the hill now.
Yeah.
Going to be a good scalp for Mick Conlon.
Moving on, news and notes. Jake Paul and Haseem Rahman Jr. in the news of the last couple of days. It's been all over. They were supposed to fight on Showtime pay-per-view in Madison Square Garden on Showtime pay-per-view, like I said, in New York City this upcoming Saturday as well. But Jake Paul's team released a statement in a press release saying that Haseem Rahman Jr. Didn't make, you know, wasn't on course to make weight by the weigh-in on Friday, and also that the New York Commission was also involved and said no, he can't fight. Haseem Rahman Jr. and his team have came out and said that's not true, that he can make the weight, and that they canceled it. And then there's been reporters going back and forth saying, oh, you know, Rahman didn't make weight. He signed the contract. Why did he sign the contract? And then some other people, and even including Dana White, the president of the UFC, said that the event wasn't trending well sales wise. He said that it cost $500,000, $500,000 to essentially rent out or use Madison Square Garden, the big arena, just to use it, $500,000. So after that is you have to start making money. And I think when he said it over the weekend, Dana White at his UFC event, I think he said that they had only sold like $1 million of tickets or, you know, profit or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but who knows? Who knows? One place, you know, one side says one thing, one says the other. But the one thing that stays with me is that you got to remember during the kickoff press conference a couple weeks ago, his dad, Haseem Rahman Sr., did call out his son. And did say the one thing that I can say about my son, and I'm paraphrasing here, and he's like, and he's not going to like it, but I'm going to say it anyways. And sometimes he undertrains and underperforms or something like that. He called him out pretty much saying like, yeah, he's kind of lazy sometimes, you know, and he doesn't put in the work. So when I found out this happened, that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, well, you know, who has the credibility here? You know, I think it's a combination. I do think it's a combination that maybe it wasn't trending well. Obviously, they wanted Tommy Fury because Tommy Fury brought a big casual UK audience, which I understand that, but that didn't work out. Obviously, he's had some trouble. You know, there's some travel issues, obviously, with probably allegedly MTK and all the associations over there. But they brought in Haseem Rahman Jr., hoping that they could save the event, but I didn't know. There wasn't a lot of people there, you know, every time that Jake Paul has fought the last couple times, I've had people ask me about it. Like, oh, he's still fighting. Oh, who's this guy fighting? Yeah. I was like, yeah, I can't believe he's fighting. Nobody. I know they just barely announced it a couple weeks ago and it was put together last minute, but nobody's asked me about it, you know? And it was, you know, if you kind of go on that, I know it's kind of a small measure to go off of, but just based on how we are in the fight game. And when people ask us, you know, when casual fans come up to us and ask us about certain fighters, and then like, oh, okay, you know, this, they're kind of crossing over, it's kind of working. It wasn't happening for this fight. And it was a pay-per-view. It was a pay-per-view. I don't know how much, what the price point was, but maybe it wasn't trending well. Maybe it wasn't. Who knows? Who knows? But I like I said, I go back to the his dad, Haseem Rahman Sr., calling him out at the press conference, his own son, saying sometimes he underperforms, undertrains. He doesn't, you know, pretty much saying like, oh, he's kind of lazy sometimes. And then this happens, you know? It's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, you signed the contract, but it didn't work. And they're all going back and forth on Twitter. And then Haseem Rahman and his team did like a virtual press conference with a bunch of media members, like an hour or two after it was announced that the fight was off. And I don't know, man. I don't know. It was just a total shit show. What did you think?
No, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think we'll know for sure. You know, is it the way? Is it the fact that, you know, the fight just wasn't selling and it hadn't reached, you know, the media type of buzz that the normal Jake Paul, you know, fights do? But I remember, I think I said on the show at the time, is I was at his fight, you know, when he fought Tommy Morrison's son, and, you know, he was winning until he got caught. He was kind of really piecing the dude up until he got caught, you know, with an uppercut and dropped. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, he's going to get down to, you know, initially it was what, 200 pounds. And then he eventually settled on like 205 pounds. And then, you know, supposedly he said that he wanted to do it at 215 because 205 wasn't going to work. And then the fight got called off. So, but I remember just looking at him and thinking like, this guy's going to struggle to make that, because he was solid, like solid muscle.
Yeah.
And to get off fat's obviously hard, and to try to like burn off all that fat and, you know, like essentially try and get rid of some of the muscle or something like that, is that's going to be, you know, hard work, you know, a lot of cardio, a lot of sauna, a lot of dieting, and, you know, to lose that type of weight in what, like a week?
Yeah.
That's all he's got left.
That's too much. I mean, who knows? Who knows what happened? But I saw somebody tweeted, and I forgot who tweeted, but I wish I can give them credit, but they said something along the lines of, well, now we can officially welcome Jake Paul to the sport of boxing now that this has happened. You know, like, this is how it works a lot of the times. So sometimes this happens, and it happens more than people think in the sport. Like, oh, it's canceled because of weight issues or this or that, or, you know, they'll never say that it wasn't trending well in terms of sale, but, you know, sometimes, most of the time, that's what happens behind the scenes. You can kind of speculate and pretty much be on the nose with it. But who knows? Maybe it was a combination. Like I said, Dana White said it. Obviously, these promoters, people, sometimes they just hate each other, and he's not really a big Jake Paul fan, social media fan. But Dana White, I mean, if you want to give him any type of credibility, he's a billionaire who's run the UFC for 20 years or so, and he's ran several shows and still continues to run several shows in New York City at Madison Square Garden. So I would think that he would have a lot of contacts probably in Madison Square Garden who probably told him like, oh yeah, it's not really trending that well. I mean, who knows, but sometimes people just like to stir the pot and they'll just throw something out there. But so you gotta take everything with a grain of salt. But yeah, Haseem Rahman Jr., you know, it is what it is. It didn't work. But kind of going back to what I said, or what that tweet I saw, Jake Paul, you can officially be welcomed into the sport of boxing now that you've experienced the cancellation, whatever the reason was, whether it was a lack of sales or a combination of that and the weight and the contract with Haseem Rahman Jr. and the opponent. That's what happens a lot in boxing. Welcome to the game. Another tidbit, Regis Prograis and Jose Chones de Peda have been formally ordered to fight by the WBC. For the 140-pound WBC belt, vacant title. Hopefully this happens, because you know how many times the sanctioning body, especially WBC, has ordered fights over the years. And just because they order it, it doesn't mean it actually happens. They've ordered significant fights in the past, and they've never happened. So are we going to see it? What's the likelihood that this actually gets made?
I think this one will. I don't see, you know, Prograis or Zepeda turning it down. And then obviously the winner of this fight goes on to fight, you know, Jose Ramirez. Jose Ramirez was originally supposed to fight Zepeda, but then he is getting married in October, and that's when they wanted to do the fight. So WBC said, okay, well, Prograis can stand in, and then the winner of this fight will fight you, you know, after that. So all three good fighters, be good to see, could be a good little round robin, to be honest with you. So I hope it does get made.
Yeah, and Regis Prograis has been waiting for a long time here. They've been blocking him out, which obviously happens in promotional politics in the sport of boxing, but Regis Prograis finally seems like he's about to get his shot again. So let's see if he capitalizes on the opportunity. Also, owner of the Indianapolis Colts, which is the American football team in the state of Indiana here in the United States, has reportedly paid $6 million for a Muhammad Ali WBC championship belt at an auction. It was the belt from the 1974 Rumble in the Jungle when he first performed that rope-a-dope and defeated George Foreman in probably one of the most famous fights and events of all time. I mean, is it really that surprising? One of the biggest athletes in history, not just athletes, just people, you know, talking about people, not just athletes, just people in the world, and his belt from arguably his most famous bout in his career in history goes for that much money. Are you surprised?
No, it's just, you know, I'm sure, you know, imagine what it's going to gather 25 years from now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Piece of history, you know, one of the most iconic fights ever, you know, of all time. And that's probably only going to go up in value.
I wish we could have made a bet.
Right.
Even though we wouldn't have won, we at least could have said, well, we bet for that. We lost, though. $50. Also, DAZN has acquired the U.S. broadcast rights to the heavyweight championship rematch between Alexander Usyk and Anthony Joshua on August 20th, according to ESPN. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, where the fight is taking place, has initially bought the rights to the entire event and were fielding offers from several networks, which included ESPN, and I'm sure other big ones as well. But DAZN edges out everybody and gets the U.S. rights, which I'm sure was a pretty big, I'm sure they feel that's a pretty big win, which is kind of strange because then they signed Anthony Joshua to DAZN a couple months ago, but then they don't get the first fight that he has. And if he loses again, it's like, oh, you know, what happens? You know, he's still marketable, obviously. It still works for him. You know, he can still generate money, but it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, well, you know, we'll your contract with us will start after this next fight, you know, but we'll see. I mean, I'm sure that was a part of the deal. And like, oh, you know, you have to field offers from Saudi Arabia's controlling the controlling stake here. But that fight also, at least in the UK, will be available on Sky Box Office and on DAZN in the rest of Europe. So are we surprised here? You know, I that would have been interesting if ESPN got it.
Yeah, that would have been to see, you know, what they did and how much they charged for it. But yeah, I think when Eddie Hearn kind of touched on the fact that Anthony Joshua's fight, the rematch with Usyk, wasn't in that contract, he thought, okay, well, it's probably going to go to Sky just because of like the bigger audience they have, you know, like the amount of houses that's going to be in the UK. And do they really want to kind of pay Joshua twice? Because they're paying the contract, and then for an individual fight, you know, that's a lot of money to put on a, you know, Anthony Joshua. So I'm sure that they'll be hoping, wishing, praying that, you know, AJ gets the win against Usyk and brings all those titles back to DAZN, you know, for future heavyweight fights.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see, though. We'll see. We're a couple weeks out, so about 3 weeks or so closer to that fight. So it's coming right around the corner. And also breaking news, I guess, if you want to call it, that just happened tonight as we were recording this. Golden Boy Promotions has hired a new public relations director, friend of the show, and she was recently a guest on our show within the last couple months or so. Jane Murcia, who was formerly of BZA PR, has been hired as a director of public relations for Golden Boy Promotions. So congratulations to her. She's back in the sport of boxing in an official capacity now. She started with Golden Boy Promotions, obviously, like she mentioned in her interview that we did with her within the last 2 months or so, I believe. And then she left for other avenues, and now she returns as the big boss at Golden Boy. So welcome back, Jane. And we'll obviously see you ringside at the fights, and we can't wait to work with you again. So for once again, actually, no, before we completely end it, Mike, let's do our usual. Let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing the return of Teofimo Lopez.
The takeover is back. So for once again, from my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.